from here to there. We cannot go unless we change and start to grow. Welcome to Lead, Sell, Grow, a show that helps you amplify your leadership, grow your sales, and take your life to the next level, all while being human. Here are your hosts, Eric Konovalov and Harry Speight.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Lead, Sell, Grow, the Human Experience Podcast. We're so excited that you're here with us again. Harry and I had a conversation today with a podcaster who's, you know, further down the road than where we are with podcasting, has a lot more downloads. He's, I think, in the top 15 downloads, I don't know, per month on iTunes, something like that. And he said, he told us today, he said, you guys aren't even asking anybody to subscribe or review your show. He's like, you're missing the boat. Give people the opportunity and remind them. So here's my opportunity. I'm giving you guys an opportunity to go subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. If it's anything less than 5-star, please stop listening to our show. We really don't want you. I'm kidding. Give us a 5-star review. Even if it's a 4-star, give us a 4+ star review. You know, some recommendations, subscribe to the show. Greatly appreciate it. We do this stuff just to bring you amazing guests like we have today. But before Harry introduces our guest today, don't forget, join our Facebook community. It's the Lead, Sell, Grow tribe on Facebook. It's the Human Experience tribe on Facebook. And we'd love to have you there. So if you've subscribed, if you've left some good comments, and if you went and joined our Facebook group, you're awesome. And if you didn't, you're probably a procrastinator, and I'm not going to judge you any further. So I'm going to give it up to my man, Harry Speight, to introduce our guest.
Oh, my goodness. My microphone has just went out on me. A wire was pulled by some knucklehead. Well, the stress level is killing me. But yes, please subscribe. Now we just went from a 5 to a 2.3, I think, Eric, based on my great start. But I am really thrilled today because we have Matthew Ode. And this is going to be a great podcast because Matthew is all about surviving cancer and coming out of a coma. He's got quite the story. At age 24, Matthew was diagnosed with stage 3C testicular cancer. By the age of 25, he was in a 2-week non-induced coma where he faced multiple near-death experiences, having to relearn to live his entire life again. Through years of perseverance and hard work, Matt is now a keynote inspirational speaker. I'm already inspired by his story, and he's a cancer advocate, has like 50 million followers on Facebook, or 500. It's a pretty big number. And he's a mentor. He's helping small businesses with their message and his story about transforming, overcoming setbacks, and getting people to find their superpowers, which you and I need, Eric, superpowers. So all of this while creating, teaching people how to create an impactful story and message to share to the world their dreams. So welcome, Matthew. How is your health these days, young man?
Well, first, thank you, Harry. Thank you, Eric, for having me. And I'm doing really well. You know, big news, I just proposed to my girlfriend on Thursday, so it has been incredible. You know, it's been a journey, you know, fast 4 to 5 years.
And she said yes?
She said yes.
So awesome. Ooh, that's even better.
Weekend and a great week to start off with. So I have all this energy and excitement. So I'm excited to, you know, really share a lot of my lessons that I've, you know, I'll share my story, but it's mostly the lessons I've learned to help your community today. And just excited to be here. So thank you guys.
Yeah, are we the first podcast since the proposal?
First podcast since the proposal.
Bam. Yep. Bam. Oh, now you guys have to subscribe to this podcast.
I know. I have one at 4 tonight too. So I'm using all my energy here and hopefully I'll still have some left. And, you know,
we're going to pass champagne around right now.
Right there. Yeah. We go.
I think the glass is tinking.
Absolutely.
So tell us what are some of the, let's see. So we're going to go back. You said you didn't really want to talk too much about your story or you didn't want, but the story, obviously, the what you learned from it. Can you give us a little bit prior to the cancer and then post cancer and everything in between? It should only take us about 2 hours. Uh-huh. But you have 3.5 minutes to go. So go. No, yeah, so tell us a little bit about prior.
Yeah, we can go through any part of the story you want. You know, usually I can share my story for hours, but
I'd love to hear about what it was before and the waves you're riding, because at age 24, you're probably thinking nothing can go wrong in life, right?
Absolutely. So yeah, so at 24, I was a personal trainer. I basically predicated my life to health. I mean, it was, you know, I was eating the right foods every day, working out. I mean, and the last person anybody thought was going to get sick was me. And especially at 24, you know, you think you're invincible. And, you know, I just started dating Lauren at the time. And, you know, all of a sudden I started noticing these back pains throughout the summer. And, you know, as a young adult, I kept shrugging it off. And one night I woke up puking up blood, got rushed to the emergency room. They found out that I had lost 2/3 of the blood circulating in my body, which is equivalent to being shot with a gun. They rushed me in to give me 6 bags of blood, rushed me into an emergency surgery. And the next morning I woke up to the doctor holding my hand, telling me that I had an 11-centimeter tumor in my small intestine. And they had to rush me to the main campus of the Cleveland Clinic because I was at a local hospital at the time. And from being a healthy personal trainer to one day later, totally 180, being diagnosed with, you know, at that time, I didn't know it was for sure cancer, but pretty much being diagnosed with cancer was just absolutely mind blowing. And, you know, as they rushed me to the clinic, they did a bunch of tests on me, found out that I had the highest stage of testicular cancer. And what I'll tell you right here, so I'll give some lessons, we'll go a little bit longer. So when I was first diagnosed, I remember looking at my parents, it was just me and my parents at the time. And I just remember seeing them crying. And the only thing I could think about was, how am I going to be strong for them? How am I going to be strong to give the news to Lauren? And I held all of my emotions in. And for us men, we are not good. I'm going to tell you straight up, for 99% of us, we are not that great at sharing our emotions. And I truly, truly believe, for me, until I was able to release it, a lot of our anxiety, depression, PTSD, all of these mental health, you know, struggles that we go through in life comes from holding in emotions and not being willing to share to just one person that we know, like, and trust. And for me, that's what I felt like I needed to do, is be this strong person. So I was building up all this anxiety, all of this stress in my life, and it was making the matter way, way worse than it needed to be. And, you know, a few days goes by.
Like, in what way, Matt? Could you?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you say that, but it's like, okay, so if I don't cry, like, what is that causing me if I don't show emotion?
I'm not saying you have to cry, but what I am saying, though, is if you want to just hold all of your emotions in, that's going to cause a lot of pain, anger, whatever you're feeling. And I'm, like I said, you do not have to be doing what I'm doing right now. Everyone thinks, oh, I'm not going to go share my story on social media. I'm not going to go show my story. You don't need to. Find somebody either. There's two ways to do this, Eric. You can either find somebody that you know, like, and trust, like a spouse, a family member, or find somebody who you can relate to. So for me, I was able to talk with another testicular cancer patient and share my thoughts, because guess what? He already knew most of the emotions that I was feeling. When I'm feeling shitty because I'm going through chemotherapy, he can say, I know how that feels because I was in your shoes not too long ago. So you have two options. You can ask a friend or somebody you love, or you can share it with somebody, you know, that you can relate to. And I'm not saying that it's going to happen overnight, because I will say this, it's okay to grieve. It's okay to feel upset. It's okay to be down on yourself. But if you live in that situation, if you let it define you, if you become the victim of that situation, that's where all of the mental and emotional trauma comes into your life. So I always say, feel the emotions, but at some point you need to take action to get over it. And I truly believe by letting it go, for me, I started with Lauren, and it was about 2-3 days later, and just broke down crying. That was my way of sharing it. And then I started talking to another testicular cancer survivor. And that was the key to when I was going through chemotherapy, because when they found out I had testicular cancer, immediately I was on chemotherapy. When I was going through chemotherapy, he'd come every day to visit me. And that right there allowed me to, when I wasn't feeling so well, allowed me to express those emotions and feel like I wasn't alone. Because I'm gonna tell you right now, a lot of us, the reason we don't share our emotions, it's because we feel like nobody understands us. We feel like we're alone. We feel like if we share it, people are just going to shrug us off or not going to understand the situation. But I promise you, whatever you're going through, you aren't alone in that situation. People have gone through the same things you have or in a similar situation. So that would be my answer.
So did you reach out to that person, or did you just happen to know somebody who had survive testicular cancer?
So really cool thing is the Cleveland Clinic, which is where I went to, is thank goodness one of the top hospitals in the country. They also have a program called the Fourth Angels Mentorship Program. And what that is they connect you, as long as you'd like, they connect you with somebody who's had the same type of cancer as you and similar age group. And that's how I got connected. So I was like, I absolutely would love to talk to somebody. I think it would be great for me. And, you know, unfortunately, not a lot of, you know, hospitals necessarily have that. So what I do is, for me, when I help people, is I either try to be that help for them, or I connect them to other cancer communities, like testicular cancer communities that I'm a part of. So I was lucky enough to have that, and it made a world of difference for me.
Wow. I didn't think I'd ever hear anybody say testicular cancer, and I was lucky enough to have that in the same sentence. But it sounds like you used it as a rocket booster for yourself.
Yes. So I have a favorite saying that you guys might have heard before, and that is, everything in life happens for you, not to you. And here's what I mean by it. People can take it however they want. Here's how I look at it. You can take the most unfair situation, in my case, high stage of testicular cancer, you know, potential death, obviously all these crazy things. And I could say, why is this happening to me? Meaning making excuses, blaming other people. If you're faith-based, blaming God, whatever you want to do. Or you could say, how is this happening for me? Take the same exact shitty situation and say, how is this a lesson? How can I grow to become a better version of myself? And more importantly, though, how can I use all the lessons I've had throughout this experience to eventually, down the road, help other people? You want true fulfillment? You want true happiness in your life? It's not about you. It's about giving back to other people. It's about serving them through something meaningful in your life. Either something you went through, something you're passionate about. That is what creates happiness and fulfillment in your life.
So when did you get that?
Oh, sorry. You go.
Sorry, I'm just curious about the timeline here, right? Because bam, you're healthy. Next day, you're puking up blood. You're in the hospital. Day later, you find out you got testicular cancer. Was it that day you're like, oh, this is great. How is this happening for me?
No, it's a lot. No, absolutely not. So I will say this, down the road, yes, but it comes down to your support system. It comes down to, who are you surrounding yourself with in your life? If you want to have a positive mindset, if you want to get to any destination, all business owners listening to this, you want to get to any destination in your life, you better surround yourself with people who are either already at the destination you want to be at or are going in that same direction. And for me, it wasn't business at that time. It was more healing myself and getting through the right mindset. So I needed to surround myself with people who are going to uplift me, give me positivity. When I was knocked down and I needed help, I wasn't afraid to ask somebody to say, hey, listen, can you just talk with me, or can you do X, Y, and Z? So it took time, but I always say this too, when you're consistent by doing one little thing every day, it builds momentum into your life. And that is something I did tell myself, because I was always into sports. I was always into being disciplined with myself when I said I was going to accomplish something. So when I decided, hey, listen, I have to go do, you know, chemotherapy, I'm all in. And what I mean by all in is what do I need to do today to push myself forward and complete chemotherapy at the time? And it's usually one small task a day that builds up to something massive in your life. It's the compound effect. I always tell people, don't do everything at once. Focus on one thing at a time and then build off of that, because momentum ultimately builds confidence in your life. And then confidence builds rituals and routines. And rituals and routines, when I woke up after, you know, it took me 3-4, you know, weeks, I was on chemotherapy for about 3 months. After that first month of me saying, hey, listen, I'm not, you know, I'm going to be down, you know, some days there's going to be days I can't get out of my bed, X, Y, and Z, but I'm still going to focus on one thing. By a month in, it was a ritual and routine. I already knew that when I woke up, it wasn't like, oh, I have to go and do this. I understood it was going to be painful, but it was already starting to be a routine in my life that I knew I was going to get done. So that's what I was
kind of, can I ask what kind of pain, when you said that's painful for those of us who have not had chemotherapy, can you shed a little light on that?
Absolutely. So chemotherapy is basically a toxin they put in your body that destroys all good and bad cells. And for me, it was meant to destroy all the cancer cells in my body, because it spread all across my upper body, and then also to kill that tumor. So to shrink the tumor. And basically I was fatigued every day. I was nauseous most of the days. I lost my hair within, you know, a couple of weeks. I lost a ton of weight. So body image issues, you know, me, you know, being this personal trainer to now losing 40 pounds throughout chemotherapy, you know, all of these things, and you have to deal with them. And, you know, then you have unexpected things like, you know, for me, I had an unexpected surgery because, you know, what they were doing at first is they would usually you get what's called a port in your body. So this is my port right here. So what mm-hmm. that does is it allows when they stick a needle in, it goes to a bigger vein so that the chemotherapy doesn't shrink your smaller veins up. But for the first four rounds of chemotherapy, I had five rounds. They would go through my arms and the chemo just completely destroys your veins. So it clots everything up. So after the fourth round, they tried one day five times to get, you have to get blood return before you can get your chemo. Tried five times and I literally was this close to passing out. So then I had to get, you know, a surgery to get the port in, and it was just aggravating. Another thing, my 3-year-old puppy who was diagnosed with cancer about 3 months before me, we were fighting this battle together. If you ever had a, you know, a pet, you know, it's like your best friend. He passes away during my third round of chemotherapy, totally destroys me mentally. I go into a victim mentality instantly. So there's little things throughout there that like you just never know. And that's life in general. You know, life is unfair for so many reasons. But once again, that is where I think, Eric, that's probably one of the biggest ways where I shifted my mindset is after my my puppy passed away. And I went to that victim mindset about a couple days later after me not wanting to go to chemo, blaming, you know, a lot of people. I realized that it was getting me absolutely nowhere. And I had to shift my mindset in order to go into the right direction. So that's what I did. I said, listen, like, this is not what anybody in my life would want me to do, is just give up on myself. And that's not what I'm here to do either. So that really shifted me into a, you know, how is this happening for me kind of mindset.
Wow. What was the prognosis when they found out that it was cancer?
Like, you mean,
did they give you a certain amount of time that you were gonna, were you expected to live?
Yeah, I was expected. They never said I was like not in that case. Once we get to the second part, that's where like a lot of the real like near death experiences where I had very low chances of surviving. But this case, testicular cancer is very curable, but unfortunately with mine, let me put things in perspective. They take what's called your AFP, which is a blood tumor marker. And that is what tracks, you know, how high or how advanced your cancer is. And usually you want your AFP to be below 5. That just means you're cancer-free, no worries. I was over 75,000. I was off their charts. I wasn't even on their charts to get things in perspective. So they weren't going to tell me, oh, hey, Matt, there's a good chance that you may not make this. But they also were like, this is really serious. And this isn't just like a yellow brick road kind of thing where you just get surgery, get chemo, and you're done. They knew it was going to be a tough route. So
then what happened? So you said this was the second round when you found out that your test scores were off the charts in a negative way. Then what happened with you?
Yeah. So they already knew my test. The second they did before I was on chemotherapy, they knew my test results were way above. But after chemo, I did see some good results, but here I'll get into why everything started getting really complicated. So after chemotherapy, my doctor sits down with me and he says, hey, we have good and bad news. Good news, your tumor shrunk from 11 centimeters to 3 centimeters. The chemo's working. Everything's going in the right direction. I said, awesome. But he said, the problem is it's wrapped around what's called your inferior vena cava. And your inferior vena cava is a central vein that goes from the bottom of your upper body to your heart. So we're gonna have an 11-hour surgery. We're gonna have to have 4 surgeons involved, and we have no idea what the complications are gonna entail. So I go to get the surgery. Like I told you, I lost about 40 pounds. So I was 185 pound personal trainer then. I'm 145 pounds now. Get the 11 hour surgery done. They cut me open from my left hip to my right hip. I wake up 3 days later, I'm close to 200 pounds. So what had happened was my body went into this survival mode. It started swelling up all over my body. And within a week and a half, I'm out of the hospital within a week, and within another half a week to a week, I get rushed back into the emergency room because I have all this pain throughout my body, especially in my back. And they find out that all this swelling was supposed to be draining, but it wasn't. And they had to drain 7 liters of fluid out of my stomach, which caused me to go into complete kidney and liver failure. I had a cone drilled inside my head to relieve potential brain swelling. I had a catheter in my chest and in my neck because they thought I was going to be on dialysis the rest of my life. And I fell into a 2-week non-induced coma.
Jeez.
And it's all happened within a couple of days. And, you know, really, you know, I could share a really, you know, powerful story with you guys if you...
We like powerful stories because now I'm like really depressed.
Is it a story about you in a coma?
Jeez Louise.
It's how I came out of my coma. So
yeah,
my mom, and once again, do not push faith on anybody.
So, all right. So can we just back up 1 second?
Yeah, ask me.
So you have all this stuff going on in the hospital.
Yep.
Right. So you went back in, you've got all the, you know, drilling and cones and things going on.
They split him in half, Harry.
I know, but that was before.
Like a Houdini, like cut. Like,
yeah, no, I know, but now he went home for a few days, which blows my mind. Yeah. And then you're back in. So, when did you go into the coma? Right after you got back in?
Right after, basically. So what had happened was my body, so they had a draining tube in me after my initial first surgery. And they said there's the draining, all that fluid in your body should drain out. We have a draining tube. One day it just stopped, just like that, Harry. Like literally, it was working, and then one day it just stopped. And I swear, they had me on Percocet, they had an Oxycontin, it didn't do anything. That's when I got rushed into the emergency room, and I had what's called compartment syndrome. And compartment syndrome is basically when your organs and everything just start to shut down. And it happened literally within 2 days. They were draining all this fluid out of my stomach, and my body just totally shut down. And it wasn't a seduced coma either, it was a non-induced coma. So that's what made it really challenging, was they didn't know when I was going to wake up. They didn't know if I was going to wake up. And, you know, here's the powerful story though. You know, once again, I don't push faith on people, but I want to share this story because I think it'll bring perspective and maybe, you know, just a cool story into your guys' podcast. So what had happened?
Just so you know, we allow conversations about God openly, but no talking about moms.
Person that
I'm kidding, you know, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
This person that created me, my mom. No, yeah. So my mom, she would hold. She held three local prayer services. Hundreds of people would come to the local prayer service, and we had thousands of people. This is what they told me: thousands of people praying around the world. And my mom, my dad, and Lauren were the only three that were allowed at the ICU at that time, and they stayed every day. Every single day they stayed there. And what Lauren would do was every day she'd come up to me, she'd hold my hand, and she'd just pray for healing, pray for me to wake up eventually. And I swear to you, on the last prayer service, the very last prayer service, as people were praying in the prayer service, as people were praying around the world, and Lauren holding my hand praying was the moment I woke up from my coma. I remember Lauren seeing that my eyes were starting to kind of open. So she rushed over to the doctors. They didn't believe her at the time. They come rushing in. They start to see my hands start to flutter. And that was when they realized that I was starting to wake up. And for me, that was God saying, Matt, this isn't the end of your journey. This is just the beginning. And I want to ask a lot of people now, if you are in a rock bottom situation in your life, financially, relationship, your health, whatever it is, I want you to know that rock bottom situations, in my opinion, are actually one of the best things that could ever happen for you. Because what it allows you to do is it gives you a completely new chapter, a completely new direction of where you probably ultimately should have been going your entire life. And a lot of us, I pray you never get cancer or anything like that, but I do hope you find a challenging moment in your life, because all of the struggles, all of the failures, all the pain, that is what actually molds you into the person who you're meant to be in your life. And this moment, or these moments that I'm about to share, is what molded me into where I'm at today. And I'm telling you, every one of you, you have your own powerful story of something you've gone through. And remember, when you're in that low moment, the only place you can go from there is up. And for me, it was just a brand new chapter in my life. It was a new direction of where I needed to go.
Yeah, that's freaking amazing. It either got really cold in my room here, or I had the chills from your story. So I'm thinking,
man,
it might
be the latter.
Chills
all over the place.
Jeez Louise. That's such a great, powerful story. So are you a person of, I mean, were you always a person of faith, or?
Yeah, I believe in God, and I was Christian, but I wasn't like strong in faith. Like today, everything I do comes out to my faith, because you know, as an entrepreneur, or as a business owner, that beginning stage of that journey is the loneliest journey. And you need to have a lot of faith in whether it's just faith in yourself. But for me, it's, you know, using God to push me forward. So everything I do in my life now is predicated towards him. But before that, I was like so-so, you know, I just kind of, but you know, that was, you know, even though I just told that story, I had a lot more complications, you know, along the way. So
You mentioned there was like, was there, you said multiple near death experiences.
Yeah. So what happened next was actually probably the closest I ever was to death. So after I got out of my coma, once again, you know, I was still bedridden and couldn't move or anything, but they took out, I also had a breathing tube in my mouth. A week later, they saw I was making some progress. So they took the breathing tube out of my mouth and they went to go take out one of the catheters in my neck. As they go to take out the catheter in my neck, I have what's called an arrhythm heartbeat. I go into cardiac arrest. They have to do 8 minutes of CPR on me and basically bring me back to life. And I fall into another 1 week coma. And at this point, I'm in the ICU for about 25 to almost 30 days. And I wake up and not knowing where I am, but I try to move and I can't move an inch. And I realized real quickly that I had to relive my entire life again. And from laying in my bed to taking my very first steps again, took 2 weeks with four nurses every single day coming in to help me just through that process. And, you know, at this point, I'm actually four surgeries in because it took three surgeries to remove all the fluid in my body. And after that, you know, about 3 days after, 3 days after I get out of the ICU, so I was in the ICU for over a month, 3 days out of it, I'm almost ready to go home. They're about maybe 4 or 5 days. They're taking me to my final stages of physical therapy. I look down at my stitches as they're wheeling me, not in a seat, as they're wheeling me in my bed. I look down at my stitches, burst open out of nowhere, get rushed into a fifth major surgery. They had to do what's called an open wound surgery on me. They couldn't close my skin back up. So I had to leave a football sized mesh over my stomach, take out all of my abdominal muscles. And as you could tell, I was back in the ICU room. And this is another massive change in my life where I sat there for 2 days awake, but I had a breathing tube in my mouth and they didn't know I was actually fully awake to take the breathing tube out. So for 2 days, I had to be conscious of what was going on, but I couldn't talk. I couldn't move because they had my hands tied to the bed because they didn't want me touching my wound. So for 2 days, I had to contemplate with God if I'm done with my life or if I'm going to just keep pushing forward. And obviously, I took the second option. And for me, I said, whatever I do next, it is going to be the biggest push of my life. And I look at it like this. I looked at it as a slingshot. Maybe not at that moment, but now I look at it as like a slingshot. And what I mean by that is every setback we have in life is a little more resistance. But there's going to be one day where you just say enough is enough and you just let that thing go. And the more setbacks, the more adversity, the more challenges you've had, the greater the opportunity, the greater the push forward. And for me, I walked further. When I got up off that bed, I walked further than I had ever done previous to the ICU room, previous to any of the other hospital visits. And I was out of the ICU within 3 days and I was out of the hospital within about a week and a half. And really cool story. I have a lot of cool stories, but another cool story is I was released on March 17th of 2017, exactly 1 year from when I met Lauren, which we met on March 17th of 2016, which is St. Patrick's Day, which is now our day together. And for me, it was God saying, hey, putting an angel into your life. And she stayed with me all 50 plus days in that hospital. Never left unless she had to go to work. Her birthday was during that day. Valentine's Day was during that day. We had a bunch of stuff going on and never left. And she couldn't even talk to me for about 40 to 45 out of the 53 days because I couldn't talk. And just goes to show that I wanted to let people know when you're going through challenging moments in your life, I can almost guarantee there's one person. Who is that one person? I want you to recognize them. Who is that one person that you know will be there for you no matter how challenging the moments are. And if you know who that person is, you know, for me, I used to take Lauren for granted a lot. And now you just need to realize that you need to appreciate those people in your life. So if you know who that person is, shoot them a text today, give them a call, or just tell them how much you appreciate them in your life. So
that was your parents.
Yeah. My parents as well. I appreciate it.
Not that I'm downplaying Lauren, but I mean, as a parent, it's just, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
You know, the frustration level, I mean, the roller coaster. So can you tell us about how awesome they are and what kept them going?
Absolutely. So I had my mom on the faith base and then my dad was like the second doctor. I swear to God, like he was He knew so much by the time I was out that people, I'm not even kidding you, nurses would ask, are you a doctor? They would ask him because he's so knowledgeable. He's also a businessman. Yeah. He's the CEO of a very successful company. So he obtains information and he's very knowledgeable with things. So he was like all in on this. I mean, he basically knew everything from what medication I needed to when things were happening. And these nurses would almost come to him to ask for questions sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh. So you had him on that side. And then my mom, who was very faith-based, but she needed to know things. And she was a little more, I don't know how, what the right word, but she had a lot of energy and she was always, you know, being a mother, I guess. So they went through a lot of pressure though. And I'll never downplay how much they've meant to me in my life. I mean, without them and, you know, I wouldn't be here today. No doubt.
Yeah, that's great.
My dad's always been, you know, my dad was always a coach for baseball with me when I was a kid and all sports I did. And I think he's the one who instilled the discipline in me and my mom instilled the faith. So it all worked out. It was almost like I couldn't have asked for anything better.
It's as if you've got trained for that moment your whole life just to be prepared to take that punishment you took. Yeah. I'm like, if I went through what you went through, I think second day out of the hospital, I'd get this badass tattoo of like me chopping the devil's head off and just
I won. Yeah. If I showed you guys a star, then you would be like, damn, that's good enough for a tattoo. So
hell yeah. I mean, can we see it?
You can see it if you guys want. Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah. And all you listeners, if you're listening on iTunes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
I told you this was all open. And I had to grow naturally, a football-sized wound on my stomach. So,
unbelievable. I mean, you literally got sawn in half.
Jeez, yes, Luis.
I basically did. And it took a whole year for it to heal. So,
whoo! Now you have to go to YouTube and watch this episode. I don't know what minute we're on, but my goodness.
Yeah, that's...
This is one of the first podcasts that's share my scar, so this is cool. I like it.
This is now an R-rated show.
it is an R-rated
show. No nudity. No nudity, just a gnarly scar.
Yeah, we're not going to call it gore because it's beautiful that it's healed. But
yeah, it is healed now, so...
Yeah.
Matt, I really love your attitude. Just from personally going through some not so fun things in my life, I tend to not remember.
Can we backtrack? Let's wait a minute. So Eric, it's not just not so fun things in your life. You had open heart surgery.
Well, compared to this shit, it's like,
open heart surgery it's pretty extreme, right?
Yes, it was extreme. Sure. But I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about anything negative that went through my life. Like, I cannot recall those things the way, like my mind just blocks them out as if the detail in which you went through it. I don't remember my experience. Like Julia does. She'll remind me of exactly what happened step by step, who we talked to, when, what they said, how terrible it was. I don't remember it. How do you do you think through it? I mean, especially with the days in the coma with, you know, just the medicine, the physical stuff you went through. How do you remember all that?
A lot of it. I'll say first, I think a lot of the reasons people don't remember it is because it's easy to get PTSD from it. And for me, I'll tell you right now, the first year, I didn't know any of it. I didn't remember any of this, Eric. Like, honestly, it was kind of a blank, like in my mind. And then it started to kind of come back to me of everything that was going on. But a lot of the reasons, a lot of things I remember is me not being afraid to ask my parents, ask Lauren, ask my doctors, part of my journey, because what I told myself was this is just me personally. I think everybody has their own reason of dealing with these traumatic situations is I felt like by me sharing it more, I took the journey off of me. Like I took cancer away from me. Like I stopped looking at it as a why me mentality of, all these things happening to me. And I started saying, how can I help others? Remember, I told you how life's happening for you. You learn the lessons, you become a better version of yourself, and then you help other people. But when I started taking all of the pressure off of myself, like all the things that happened, and I could get PTSD or I could be angry at why things are the way they are, like why I have this stomach instead of a six pack like I used to. And I started to say, how can I start serving other people? And that's when I started asking questions. It's the questions that you ask people is how you gain the knowledge and how you are able to push yourself forward in life. And for me, I was able to ask those questions saying, hey, listen, talking about me going into cardiac arrest, talking about me being in a coma, these are not fun things to talk about, but I know for a fact that it's going to help somebody else. And now I have no, it sounds terrible, but I don't really have, when I talk about it, you probably could tell, I don't really have emotions where I'm going to break down crying or I'm upset about these situations. It's because I'm not focusing on me anymore. I'm focusing on the person that's listening in this screen right now that is broken down, that doesn't know where to go with their life. And I'm giving them hope and I'm giving them a direction of where they want to go. And that's why I was able to figure out and learn all these things.
Man, that is so powerful. So before I ask the next question, you said your dad's a CEO of a company.
Yeah.
Can we have him on a show? Like, would you ask him if he'd come on the show? Cause I would love to hear this story from how does somebody lead a company, be a leader of a family, and have a son, because like I have two boys, I've coached baseball. I've taught them how to ride their bikes. I've taught them anything they know. I've taught them how to do I can't imagine seeing my boy go through what you went through as a father. Yeah. Like I would take all that pain on in a heartbeat. So I would love to hear it from him. Yeah. Like just how it was from his side. Cause that would be,
I could ask him. I mean, I'll absolutely ask if he can be on, you know. I'll tell you right now, he is, when it comes to challenging moments, he was so present, Eric. He was so present in my life that business wasn't even in his mind at that point. And I know it sounds crazy because when you're, you know, he didn't start the business. He was the CEO. My uncle started the business. He was the CEO and he was but my dad was running all the day-to-day operations. So he basically said, listen, I'm delegating all of these to the managers and all these positions, and I am focusing on me. I mean, I'm sure he worked a little bit, but man, yeah, I would love to have him on. It's kind of cool because he's not like me where he loves to share this kind of stuff, because I think it really does still affect him. And that's why I say everyone's on their own journey. But if he's willing to open up and share part of it, I'd love to have him on. So,
well, I didn't ask Harry, but I think he'd be okay with it. I think it'd be a great conversation. Yeah. A big part of what we do.
Come on with you.
Look, some of those people who are down they're not down because they're going through the pain. They're down because their loved one's going through their pain. Mm-hmm. And I think, it doesn't get much
mama worse. Too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh gosh, the whole family. Geez.
Yeah.
Maybe one at a time. That we're not all like arguing.
But it's just such a nice, it's just such a great, Eric and I both love positive energy.
Yeah. Lauren.
Yeah. Yeah, right? No, it's
for me right now.
Lauren as well.
Yeah, Lauren's 10 feet from me now. So, you know, she doesn't do any of the podcasts with me. But we actually, really cool thing is about 2.5-3 years after everything, we started a YouTube channel called Dating After Diagnosis. And it's about my journey, but her journey as well. So her journey as a caregiver, my journey as a patient and survivor, and how we were able to cope together. Because she, by the way, was only dating me for 2 months before I was diagnosed.
Yeah.
So that was a burden to put on her. And
she must have seen something in you, man. I don't know what it was, but there had to be something she saw.
It was that six pack. And then she got in
myself, man. I don't even know, but everyone was like, it was so funny because the amount of pressure I've gotten the past 2 years of when am I going to marry her and when am I going to propose? So now I don't have to worry about any of those questions anymore. Right. So.
There you go. Can we congratulate her? Can we meet Lauren and just say congratulations?
You want me to see if she'll come on?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll see.
It'll be her first ever podcast.
Yeah.
Give me 1 second. I'll see if she's
here. Definitely. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen.
She may have actually left. She's doing.
Okay, it's all right.
She ran away once she heard this.
Yeah, huh? Exactly.
Yeah, she's like, she bolted. Tell him I left. I'm in the shower. And ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you by Selling with Dignity and The Goal Guide. And now we're back.
Left and she's doing. She's donating blood today. Gosh, she's such a good person. I don't.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
yeah. We're like, hey, can she come on tomorrow? Well, tomorrow she's feeding hungry babies in Africa. Right. I'm sorry. Well, she can't make it.
She doesn't need to help your sorry ass anymore, Matthew. So she can go help someone else.
Well, she probably saw what happens when you lose all the blood. Thank God that hospital had enough blood to
bring you back. I was so blessed. Yeah. And put things in perspective to you guys, I was 110 pounds coming out of that hospital after 50 plus days. So I went from 200 pounds to 110 pounds in a matter of 50 plus days because I couldn't eat or drink anything. Everything was liquid IV. And
you lost 90 pounds over what period of time?
Well, but the 200,
a lot of it was liquid, right? Yeah.
Yep. Okay. 80 to 90 pounds over liquid and also just not being able to eat or drink.
Yeah.
I think it was around 53 days, but it was probably a little bit more because of the initial first surgery. So maybe 60. Okay. That was it.
But you're not recommending it as a diet practice for someone like me that's 40 pounds overweight.
If you want to look like a skeleton, if you want to look like a skeleton. Okay. But, yeah, man.
The top part's already there. He needs to figure the bottom
out. I deal with adversity with humor, and I know I was probably completely out of touch with the emotion of the moment. But
no, you're good, man.
No, the emotion is happiness and laughter and positive energy because we're celebrating life right now. But Matt, so you took this experience. You didn't go back to personal training. You became an entrepreneur.
Yep.
So talk to us about that. Like, how did that idea even come to you? What's the business you started and what are you doing now?
Yeah. So how it all came together, we'll backtrack just a little bit. So, first it was me having to take care of myself. Like I told you, coming out of the hospital is 110 pounds. And what I would do was I had to go back to my mindset of saying, what is one thing I can do a day to push myself forward? Discipline plus consistency equals momentum, confidence, and rituals and routines. And that's what I was able to do. And what I would do, so giving you in perspective, I would put two lawn chairs at the end of my driveway and I would walk maybe 20 meters to the one lawn chair, sit down, and then walk back. And you know what I'd do the next day? I'd push the lawn chair a little bit further. And then I would start to eat a little bit healthier or a little bit more, just putting calories in my body. I would start to do like light lifting with 2.5 pound to 5 pound dumbbells. That's it. And eventually I gained the weight back, I gained the strength back. And after about 2 years of recovering myself mentally, emotionally, and physically through consistency and a lot of hard work, I said, okay, I did not just go through all of this stuff and come back to be doing the exact same thing that I'm doing. And I think a lot of us can say that when they go through a difficult moment in their life, they feel like they maybe have a second purpose or a second chance or a different direction in their life. Not all, but a lot of people probably feel that way. And that was what I said. So I decided, what do I need to do to start giving back? And a really cool thing happened. I started just looking at motivational YouTube videos and I came across this podcast. And this podcast was with a guy named Ed Mylett. He's an entrepreneur. If you don't know him, definitely check him out. He's an entrepreneur.
Max out. Yep.
Yeah. Max out. There you go. His podcast was with a kid named Omar. I forget the last name, but it was called Broke to 400 Million. And it caught my attention. I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it. Watch the video. And Ed Mylett, nothing about the money, everything about the shit, the struggles, the adversity, all the challenges he went through to get to where he was today and how he used his journey as a story to get to where he is, to help other people, to impact. And I said, oh my gosh, like this is where I need to go. And next thing I knew, literally a month and a half later, him and a guy named Andy Frisella, they
75 hard.
Okay. Yep.
I did the challenge. Yep.
Yep. And I did the RT Accelerator. Obviously, I didn't have the money to do the syndicate. There was like only 50 people allowed in there. That's like prestigious. Like, I don't know, it was probably close to like 75K just to get into that. But for me, I did their Accelerator program. And that changed my entire life because it allowed me to connect with entrepreneurs who basically they take a massive problem, they solve it, and they help change the world with it. And as I was sharing my story, which I was deathly afraid to share my story, deathly afraid, but I got the courage because all these guys in there were sharing their own journeys, blah, 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 this. And when I shared mine, it was like a pause and they're like, are you a speaker? What do you do? And I'm like, I don't know what I do yet. And that's what got me into speaking. And I started.
Wait, what was the program?
Andy Frisella and Ed Mylett started a mastermind together called the Arte Syndicate.
Arte?
Arte. Yep. Arte is like a Greek word for, it's a great question. It's a Greek word for something really positive. So it's like, you'll have to look it up, but.
All right. Probably kebabs, but okay.
Yeah.
Lamb kebabs.
So what happened, they also had a smaller program called the Arte Accelerator. And
it's a concept in ancient Greek that in its most basic sense refers to excellence of any kind.
There you go.
In its earliest appearance in Greek, this notion of excellence was ultimately bound up with the notion of the fulfillment of purpose or function, the action of living up to one's full potential. Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Arate. It's arate. Like karate, but without the K.
Yeah, not karate, arate. Okay. So yeah, so I did their smaller program where, you know, I surrounded myself with the right people. And I'm going to tell you right now.
So why did you do that? Like, you didn't have a business, you weren't an entrepreneur. Like, why did you do that program?
Man, it gave me a sense of direction. And all I did was I started following Ed Mylett, and I kept following him on social media, and I kept looking at his videos. And then I started looking at other motivational guys, and I said, shit, like, how do I get involved? How can I get in touch with these guys? How can I told you, if you want to get to a destination, like, either find the person who's already there or find the people that are going in your direction. And he was already way there ahead of me, but I said, how can I get in touch with this guy? And that's what got me into it. And I'm going to tell you right now, you want to know where I actually lost support? You want to know where I actually lost friends? You want to know where I actually got questioned all the time? It was as soon as I said, I'm going to join this mastermind group and invest in myself so that I can go do something bigger with my life. Because everybody expected me to just go back to the normal mat. Everyone expected me to just be the normal person that I was. And I said, no, that's not who I am. I said,
by the way? Like, did you have an option to go back and be a personal trainer? Or you'd have to do something different.
My uncle is literally like, hey, come back. And I will tell you this, I did. And I have been working there just so that I can have some money and do the entrepreneurship to eventually get into full time. But I'm going to tell you right now, like, they just expected me to say, hey, Matt, you've gone through so much. Why put more pressure on yourself?
Right.
And I'm like, life's about pressure.
Yeah.
So, shit, that makes pressure, diamonds.
Pressure creates diamonds. Yeah. That classic right, yeah. thing. And so I'm like, I'm getting this from my dad and my uncle, who are successful business owners and like things like that. But they only did it because they didn't want to see me. They didn't know that I was already mentally here, because they weren't there yet. They were still afraid to share any part of my journey. They were still afraid to go back and relive that moment where I took 2 years, man, 2 years of not focusing on anybody else but myself. It's that classic saying, in order to be selfish in life, be selfish in order to be selfless. And that's what I had to do, is I had to be selfish first, and then I could use it to help other people being selfless. So that's what got me to where I was. And eventually I got the courage to share my story. Yeah. I got on a couple of stages before COVID, then COVID hit, and now I've done.
How'd you get on stages? What are like, so you got the courage. Tell me about the very first call you made or very first stage you got on. Tell me about that. How did you do that?
The first stage I got on was actually a year later. So a year later,
surgery or after mastermind group? Sorry.
Mastermind group.
This is about Detective Eric today. I'm trying to get the timeline.
This is good. I love it. So what happened was I joined another mastermind group. I love investing in myself. You know, I mean, some people are like, oh, you don't need to do all these groups, whatever. I just like connections. I like networking. It helps me get ideas in. So I joined another mastermind group. They heard my story. It's actually a young adult and like mastermind group. There's people like, you know, at all ages, but for the most part, it was kind of like mid to upper 20s. And they started to hear my story and like, dude, we're hosting an event in Miami on this date. We need you there. Come and speak. I'm like, dude, I've never spoken in my life in part. Like, no, you're coming. This is your first gig. You're freaking doing it. There was like 250 people there. Fucking got up there, man, was shaking like a
did you get paid?
But I pulled through, man. I did it.
Awesome.
And they,
did you get paid?
I didn't get paid for that one. No.
Okay.
That one was more exposure.
Yeah. So, perfect.
Yeah. So that one was more exposure. So that one was like, hey, like, we're just gonna get your name.
Did you hire a speaking coach or anything?
Nope. What I did was I just worked through, like, I shared a lot of the stories and my messages. And at first I probably could have hired somebody, but I was already just like, hey, listen, I'm just going to go do this. I'm going to see how it works. And it wasn't perfect by any means, but dude, I'm going to tell you right now, the amount of feedback I got after was like, people were opening up to things they hadn't opened up to in years, man. These people were coming up to me and be like, my mother was an alcoholic, or and I had to live with that. I had to go through this surgery, and I was, and I've had this mental health issue, and you've helped me through this, and all these people. And right then I was like, damn.
Yeah. Impact.
This is what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to change people's mindsets and beliefs into whatever they went through in life does not define them anymore. And they can use that for a better purpose and a better way of figuring out where they wanted to go. So unfortunately, I didn't get any paid because I only got in 2 speaking gigs, and then COVID hit. And then it was all podcasts, and then it was all online.
Those stuff. Disgusting podcasts.
No, I hate those podcasts.
Did you pick up the tone there, Eric?
I know.
Yeah. I'm glad we got, I'm glad we charged them to be on.
Yeah, exactly. And we just did. It just went up.
Incredible. I absolutely love podcasts. So I've been doing that, and I got into mentorship after. That's where I started getting paid. So I started to mentor. At the time, I started mentoring other survivors, other cancer survivors specifically, because I said, I'm going to just get very niche down and I'm just going to start mentoring them. And I was targeting the survivors who felt like they were in a position that I was in like 2 years ago, meaning they had a bigger purpose. They wanted to go somewhere in their life, and I was going to be that person to help them. And I started doing a bunch of mentorship that way. And that's how I really started to generate income, doing high ticket offers, but like really helping them through that process. And that was really fulfilling at the time. And then all of a sudden I said, well, you know what? I need to be more into the cancer community. And that's when it took me about 3 months to have the courage to start a Facebook group. And my Facebook group was all about survivors, patients, and caregivers. And I wanted to build the biggest community I possibly could. And this was in October of 2020. And I had no idea how I was going to do it, but I hired a virtual assistant, me and her, just started digging in and getting people into the group. And today we have close to 5,000 members in the group, where I'm telling you right now, it is a family. It is literally a family. It's a family of people that I'm a mentor to, that I can help them, and they help me just as much and help each other. So that's been incredible. And you know, I kind of took my, so like I told you, you asked me, hey, are you still doing personal training? Well, I am still. I'm actually a wellness director right now, too. So I have a job and I do this. So that's how I'm generating income. And I said, you know what? For the next 4 to 5 months, I'd like to be generating more income on my business, but I'm going to focus on total cancer advocacy and really helping these people. And I know for a fact this is going to generate so much more income in the future than me just trying to ask for money from these people. So starting this Facebook group. And now I've transitioned into coaching, and it's not just cancer survivors or patients anymore. It's just coaches who, like any of you, have gone through something in your life and say, hey, listen, I'm looking to help others through something that I've went through, and I'm helping them build that story, build that message so that they can attract the right people into their lives. So that's my sole purpose right now.
Man, that's pretty awesome, dude. Yeah, that is really pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah, what Matt, I love about the whole thing, other than you being alive and all the great story, and you know, is that it's not just survival. It's survival to superstardom, right? It's a lot of people survive events, but they don't transform. And that's really what I'm seeing here, is that you went from where you were, which is a great, you know, it's a good spot, as a 24-year-old, but now it's this massive, you know, difference where you're going to impact, you know, potentially millions.
Thank you.
Right? I mean, it's just the story where people, where there's so many people with cancer, and it's all about surviving, right? Taking that to being a superhero is just, you know, it's an incredible opportunity, and you've done it, and helping others to see the value of that is, you know, a really amazing opportunity.
People know that their greatest gift in life is their story. Their greatest gift in life is what they've gone through and what's brought them to where they are today. And I have a favorite, you know, to end it off, I have a favorite like acronym that I use, and it's by a guy named Jim Quick, and it's called HOPE, and it's help one person every day. And what I took out of it was, don't ever underestimate the power of helping one person. And what that means is, by you helping one person, the knowledge you've given them, they can relay that to the next 2 to 3 people. By the time you've helped 10 people, you've actually helped probably close to 100 people that you've never even known. By the time you have 1,000 people or 100 people, you've helped thousands of people. And so that's why I try to tell people, give people hope by helping one person every day. If you've helped one person a day, that's a pretty successful and fulfilling day. So don't be so hard on yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Just ask yourself, did I give value to somebody today? And if you did, then it's a good day.
Dude, that's awesome. And I love Jim Quick. I've taken his memory course. I've taken his speed reading course and I've read his book. Absolutely love him. Great guy. And he's got an amazing story too, from not being able to learn and just becoming a brain coach for people. And just, and he's the guy that coaches all the X-Men and like celebrities, like dude's amazing.
Yeah.
Matt, how can people get in touch with you? I'm sure you've inspired the three people that will listen to the show.
Well, you can find me at probably the best place to just go to my website, which is mattodespeaks.com. And that'll have all my social media stuff right on there for you guys. And then if you're looking, if you have been impacted, I know this is a business podcast, but if you have been impacted by cancer and looking to get into a community, check out my cancer community Facebook group. And in the Facebook group is called Cancer Patient/Survivor. Taking Back Your Life from Cancer. And I can send you guys a link if you want, but besides that, just connect with
me. We'll link it in the comments.
Cool.
For sure.
Awesome. Yeah. This is great, Matt. Awesome.
Thank you for being with us today, Matt.
Very inspirational.
Really enjoyed this.
From here to there, you're gonna grow because you've listened to our show. If you like our podcast vibe, don't be a stranger. Hit subscribe. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to join the B2B Sales Secrets Facebook group, and we'll see you on the next episode.